As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide makes simplicity a priority so financial professionals can help their clients achieve their retirement goals. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Welcome to the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. I'm Tom Keen, along with Jonathan Farrell and Lisa Abramowitz. Daily, we bring you insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. Find Bloomberg Surveillance on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Bloomberg.com, and of course, on the Bloomberg Terminal. Inflation-adjusted interest rates, and that does fold over to real estate. And our Shanali Basak knows it has a modicum to do with a company named Blackstone. And she is with Jonathan Gray this morning. Shanali? Yeah,
absolutely. Thank you, Tom. John, thank you for joining us as the president and COO of Blackstone. You are coming off what you're calling your best quarter in your 36-year history. Now, records are very hard to keep beating. What do you tell your investors about where you go from here and how you squeeze out that next leg of growth?
Well, Shanali, it's great to be with you. I'll just stop for a moment and talk about the quarter because it's nice to focus on it. We really delivered for our customers. We had nearly record appreciation in our funds. We had extraordinary fundraising and for our shareholders, record fee-related and distributable earnings. And what's driving that, I'd say, is a couple things. First off, is where we focused in terms of investing really thematically. Some areas like global logistics, software and technology, the travel recovery out of COVID, all of those have done quite well. You saw that in the quarter. And the second thing I'd note is we continue to expand what our business is about, who we invest for, where we invest. We're moving more and more in core plus real estate and infrastructure, direct lending. And we're also serving more clients. We're serving more institutions, retail, insurance, and we've described it as a ship that's been operating in a narrow channel moving to open water. So it was a great quarter for us, and we're excited about what we can do more for our clients.
Now, John, a lot of this has also come from fund realization, investment realization. You've said you've been selling assets as well as investing in them. Now, is it getting harder to invest at these valuations and with all of the choppiness we're starting to see in the markets?
Well, it's certainly trickier as values move up to deploy capital. The good news is we have some competitive advantages. One is we operate in almost all our businesses at very large scale. So this year, we've done something like 13 public to privates that we've been invested in. That's a real competitive advantage given size. The breadth of our platform continues to expand, as I noted before. That helps us a lot. So many of our large investments were in our newer areas. And then again, what we're trying to do is find interesting areas in some of these thematic neighborhoods that we love where we can buy in at a more favorable price. So we bought in India an automotive parts company several years ago that had at that time a very small EV business, but we saw huge potential. We invested in that considerably. The company's called Sona Comstar. That company has gone public, hugely successful investment. We've made something like 15 times our investors' capital because we found a really great company that people didn't realize was an on-theme investment. And we're doing that this quarter again in the garage door opener business with a company called Chamberlain, which owns the LiftMaster brand. It's a play on the housing recovery that's happening, as well as e-commerce and access to homes, which makes so much sense through the garage. So I would say our response to a high price market is try to buy things we like, but do it in a little bit of one derivative off or where we find value in those areas. And that's the real challenge.
Do you agree with some of the competitors that you have in the banking industry? Some of, James Gorman over at Morgan Stanley, John Waldron over at Goldman Sachs. Do you believe that they have it right when it comes to inflation, that perhaps there are many who are undercounting how much of an issue it's becoming?
Yes, I would agree that inflation is definitely becoming more pervasive, more persistent than people had hoped. And I think that's happening for a couple of reasons. One is money supply has grown really significantly by more than a third since COVID, which happened monetary fiscal response to the crisis, but it puts more money in the system. And then at the same time, we have some big structural shortages. So in housing, we've been building 40% fewer homes than we did in the past. We've been investing a lot less in energy, of course, for that, because we're trying to balance that out in terms of green sustainability and so forth. And we've seen fewer people in the workforce. Right. So go ahead. Sorry, Tom.
Jonathan, I want to get away from the CEO speak and talk about the structural solution here and weakness. You came out of the University of Pennsylvania the year of Bill Clinton. You're a card-carrying bona fide Democrat. You've been hugely charitable. You're an icon across the nation for charity. Help the Democratic Party now with some charity. How do you guys put the progressives and the moderates together? What's the gray formula?
Wow, that is a big assignment.
Well, we're going to do it in 30 seconds, so go.
Yeah, sorry, go. So I think it's where there are shared objectives. I think there are things where you could say, how can we help people in lower and middle income areas and do things that drive the economy and drive opportunity for them? So immigration would be one where I think we can help the economy. We can help a lot of people. Ideally, we can bring people out of the shadows. Housing would be another area where if we built more housing, that could drive down the cost of rental housing and buying homes for lots of people. I think in a green energy context, building housing would help a lot. Education, more investment, doing more in vocational schools, community schools, in order to help people. What I want to do is create more opportunity. I think the debate in the Democratic Party is about whether we should fundamentally change the system we have, or should we give more opportunity to people who have less opportunities themselves today? And I vote with that second camp, which is, I think we have a powerful system that creates incredible companies, but more people need access to it. My wife and I created a program, New York City Kids Rise, in order to give low-income children in
John,
New York City the
John,
opportunity to save.
You underplay yourself. You're buying a building in northern Manhattan in hard cash to build the Gray Elementary School, right?
We help support Harlem Village Academies. It's certainly something that's important to us. We named it after my grandfather, Leon Gray, who believed a lot in education, the opportunity it created. And we do want to help as many people as possible. And I think that debate that you touch on, Tom, is so important because there is a solution where we can bring more people into the system, give them more opportunity, and still keep the energy and power of our economic system to create lots of jobs and wealth.
John, that's where I wanted to go, this idea of pairing some of the social objectives with the financial objectives of the Democratic Party. We've heard from them this desire to change the composition of the Fed in large part because of the oversight of Wall Street. And I do wonder, from your vantage point of a $731 billion firm that's expanding into an industry that typically has been private and not regulated as tightly, what do you expect and hope to see on that front?
Well, as it relates to our firm, I would say we are regulated, certainly, in lots of different ways. And we take that, the responsibility, the transparency, how we operate is really, really important. I think the difference between us and large financial firms, banks, is they're highly levered, right? They operate at 10 to 15 times leverage. They also have access to the Fed window and their depositors are guaranteed. None of that exists in our private, in our business managing capital for third parties. So we are regulated, but it is a different type of regulation. Our activities are different. And I would just say generally today, mm-hmm. I think the financial system in the U.S. is as healthy as I've seen. The banks have a lot of capital. There is really good oversight in markets. We're not seeing big excesses out there.
John, real quick here. I know this big year for succession on Wall Street. A lot of your peers have turned over the ranks at the top. Do you have a timeline over at Blackstone for taking the lead?
No. We feel pretty good about what's happening with Blackstone.
That was so rude.
I didn't He'll mean, give it to I us next time.
No. I would say this. Look, we have a really good setup here. Steve Schwarzman is an amazing leader, visionary business person. And I can tell you, somebody who's worked with him now for 30 years, it's an incredible gift for me and the others. So we're sticking with our approach.
To be a fly on the wall when Gray and Schwarzman go at it on politics. That must be something. Jonathan Gray, thank you so much for joining us with a small real estate startup firm, Blackstone, this morning.
Nobody ever says make it complicated. That is why Nationwide makes simplicity a priority by providing financial professionals with straightforward, client-ready resources. From clear strategies to help clients meet retirement savings and income needs, to ways to cover rising healthcare costs and more. Nationwide simplifies planning so more time can be spent helping clients. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Jens Nordvik joins us now, founder and CEO of Exante Data. Jens, let's just start with this. I had a conversation recently with PIMCO about the shape of this cycle. Can you walk me through why this one's going to be different, if you do indeed think it will be?
I think we can already see that it's a totally different cycle, right? So the recession lasted a couple of months rather than typically several years, right? So everything is moving at a turbo kind of pace. And really, what is so different about this cycle is not just the type of the shock. Obviously, a pandemic shock is normal, like it's different from a normal business cycle shock, but it's also the policy response, like just the incredible strength of both monetary, but what was really unusual is just the size of the fiscal impulse we have had. And not only is the fiscal impulse huge, it's also the stigma associated with using fiscal policy very aggressively has been kind of removed. And that means that maybe we'll get more of it going forward. We're already discussing additional steps in the US, right? Even though we've had such a big push already. So it's a totally different cycle. Like we used to have essentially only monetary policy driving the stimulus for a multi-year period, right? And now finally fiscal policy has stepped on the gas. And it's been enough to really change inflation expectations. And look around the world. Like it's not just in the US we have inflation that is on the move. It's everywhere. And we even have a bunch of central banks that are like feeling kind of behind and have to catch up. So we have EM central banks that deliver 100 or even more basis points in one go. And they were saying a couple of months ago that they would be on zero for a long time. We have the UK where we thought they were going to be on zero for a long time. And now expectations they're going to hike next month.
Yeah.
Things are moving really, really fast.
Jens, the consequences of this shift are basically disagreed upon pretty dramatically, depending on who you speak to. Some people are saying it means shorter and hotter cycles. Other people say that it means pretty much flattened out cycles with no credit cycle whatsoever because central bankers have their backs. What's your view?
So I think one point that is really important to make is that the market has this perception from the experience over the last 10 years that as soon as the central bank hikes rates by 50 basis points, 100 points, something very moderate, the economy can't take it. I think we have to be very careful there because what happened over the last 10 to 15 years was that the global economy has gone weak. And it wasn't necessarily that the rate-sensitive sectors got damaged by those rate hikes. There were other things going on that meant that the central bank had to stop. So how far the central bank can go is a totally open question, right? So for example, in the UK now, the market is convinced that the UK economy can only take 100 basis points and then they will have to cut again, right? That's a really big question. And I think for a number of countries around the world, the economy can take a great deal more than 100 basis points.
Jens, you've got industry-leading work with Exante on COVID. And you today, with your wonderful must-read releases on Twitter, you focus on cases. I'm focusing on a really ugly country-by-country flow. The Guardian emphasizes Bulgaria, Latvia in lockdown, and John Farrow's briefing me on the United Kingdom. Are we ready for another global set of lockdowns?
So look at cases, we look at hospitalizations, we look at fatalities, right? We have to look at the whole picture. And clearly we're in a part of the cycle where just the cases is going to give a different picture about how severe this is relative to previous waves, right? Because they do not translate into hospitalizations in the same degree. But that said, if you look at what's going on right now, you're right that there's some spikes in Eastern Europe. So I'll give you an anecdote. A couple of months ago, Romania sold their vaccines to Denmark, which is the country I'm born in, because they didn't want to use them themselves, right? So there's some countries where the vaccination rates are very low still, and they're going to have issues in the winter. Then there's a different group of countries where we have very, very high vaccination rates, where presumably the hospital pressure will be very, very much lower than previous cycles. So we're going to have pockets of winter waves that are concentrated in the places where they are way behind on the vaccinations. And I think from an economic perspective, you're going to find that this wave that we potentially are facing now is going to be having much, much less of an impact than any of the previous ones.
Jens, we hope so. We hope so. Thank you, sir, as always. Jens Norvik there.
You're welcome.
Of Exante Data.
Nobody ever says make it complicated. That is why Nationwide makes simplicity a priority by providing financial professionals with straightforward, client-ready resources. From clear strategies to help clients meet retirement savings and income needs, to ways to cover rising healthcare costs and more. Nationwide simplifies planning so more time can be spent helping clients. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
We need to frame up and see what has changed. We do that with the chief U.S. economist at PIMCO. Tiffany Wilding joins us this morning. Tiffany, in your orbit, in your Excel spreadsheet, what have you changed in the last week, or what are you really focusing on that's subject to change?
Well, I think, and first of all, thanks for having me. But I think what we're seeing is that the economy actually is reaccelerating after this summer period, summer soft patch, as a result of, you know, rising cases associated with this new Delta variant, rising cases of COVID-19. We are starting to see, as those case counts are going down, a pickup in spending across leisure and travel services industries. And, you know, we're talking about the labor market this morning because the claims data just came out. It does suggest to us that you are going to see a reacceleration in the labor market as well. And we expect jobs in October, net job gains to start to pick up when we finally get that report in a couple of weeks. You know, so we do see some really encouraging signs that the economy is reaccelerating, you know, and again, this makes us, you know, more confident that, you know, monetary policy can kind of get on with this tapering business right, that we expect in November, and we can continue to recover from this pandemic.
Will the Fed be surprised by nominal and inflation adjusted wage growth?
I think that we've had a couple of, you know, just in terms of high frequency data over the last couple of months, we've had a couple of very strong wage gains that have been reported in the official statistics. You know, we think that maybe there's a little bit of noise in that, and that you actually could see the wage data moderate a little bit. And that's as you get this pickup in leisure services, which tend to just have lower wage jobs. You know, but I think if you think more broadly here, going out to the next year, you know, we should see wages accelerate. And that's because we've seen a broad pickup in productivity in the economy. You know, I should get paid for how productive I am and how much prices are rising. So we should see wages accelerate. You know, and ultimately, the fact that the labor market is getting tighter, which it is, that should also put upward pressure on wages across a wider range of sectors than just kind of the low income and lower skilled jobs that we're seeing the biggest wage gains right now.
Did you hear that, Tom? If you're more productive, you need to get paid more. That was
really?
From Tiffany. Manny better be listening this morning as Tiffany Wilding delivers that sermon on what should happen in the labor market. Tiffany, talk to me about what should happen November 3rd. Matt Lazzetti was in your seat 24 hours ago talking up a rate hike at the Fed year end next year. Where are you and the team at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, so ultimately, we think that you probably get a rate hike in the beginning of 2023, and the reason for that is that we still believe that inflation is likely to moderate by the end of next year. Now, there have been some a series of shocks, if you will, that have kept inflation more higher for a little bit longer than I think people were expecting, but we do ultimately think that still comes down. That should give the Fed a little bit of breathing room in the latter half of next year. And as a result, we think that they will ultimately, it'll be 2023 before they hike.
Tiffany, do you think that Fed officials appreciate the tightening of the labor market to its full?
So I think that there are, they've certainly highlighted what we would agree are sort of quote temporary trends that are probably resulting in the labor market being tighter than it otherwise would be. And, that's health, just general anxiety around health as a result of this pandemic. A lot of these service jobs, of course, are very public facing. And then, of course, there's been child care disruption. But I do think there are some, kind of more medium term factors here that will take a little longer to work themselves out. But ultimately, we do think that they will. And that's related to actually geography, which is kind of weird. But this work from home dynamic has really changed, kind of the local market dynamics and where jobs are demanded. So there may be you're not demanding as many jobs in some of these urban city centers. You're demanding those jobs out in kind of more the suburban or maybe even the rural areas. And so we're getting that mismatch. So really the question is, how long does it take for that labor to sort of migrate out? We're optimistic. We look at data on migration from the credit reporting agencies, and it does suggest that some of these lower income zip codes and lower income folks are able to move. We've seen excess moves from those zip codes, so that's good news. But ultimately, these things take a little time to work out. And then also keep in mind that usually a hot labor market does draw people back into the labor market, and we saw that from 2017 to 2019. So I do think labor markets will get tighter. We do think you get some wage inflation, but again, I think all of this will sort of be moderated to some extent by some labor supply gains that we're going to get next year as well.
Tiffany, in the meantime, as we were talking about earlier today, the market expectation for 5-year inflation, if you look at tips, is actually climbed to the highest since 2005 at 2.8%, north of that. Do you think that is correct, that is an accurate assessment of the 5-year inflationary outlook?
Well, I think that, obviously there's more going on with the tips market than just in expectations around the near term path of inflation. But what I would say is I think that the path has become more uncertain lately. And we believe that kind of over that 5-year time horizon, it's going to remain uncertain. And that's because we think we're moving into what we're calling this kind of age of transition, where you have these kind of brown to green transitions, some, trends towards deglobalization and more of a policy focus on inclusivity. And that's both on the fiscal and monetary side, and that it has the potential to produce some upside in inflation. But I would just also keep in mind here, and I think this is much less talked about, is that there are also some downside risks to inflation as well as a result of this pandemic coming into the next 5 years. And that's that we've seen productivity and innovation really get jump-started as a result of this pandemic. You have the work from home, but then you also have trends towards digitization. And I think, the other thing is we've also seen a big buildup in debt and leverage as a result of this pandemic. It's okay now because interest rates are low. But if we have a negative economic shock, it just increases the risk that you get this, sort of debt-fueled deflationary environment. So I think there are risks to the upside and the downside here. Of course, the market's trying to incorporate that. But I think the other thing to keep in mind here is that if you look further out in the tips market, kind of at the five years forward, not to get too wonky, it is kind of trading right around the Fed's target, maybe touch above. So I think the market's still giving the Fed a lot of credibility around its longer-term inflation goals.
Tiffany, I was reading through the new outlook. Congratulations, by the way, because I know how much work goes into that for you and the team. And within that, it just seemed to me that as a team, you seem to think the Fed could be constrained down here, that it can't lift rates too much. What do you think that means for how long this cycle will be, the shape of this cycle, given how constrained you guys think the Fed is?
Well, ultimately, we think this cycle, likely will be faster than what we saw after the great financial crisis. You know, and part of that is just because of the policy that we've seen, the really extraordinary policies. So instead of, taking years to get back to trend growth after the 2008 recession, we're likely going to do it, within the next several quarters. And that's really a testament to the amazing fiscal policy that we've gotten. So just by that definition, this should be a faster, a faster cycle. But in terms of a Fed policy, here, I really think that when you start to raise rates, as the tightening really gets in the cracks, as sort of was famously described. And really the question is, what is, who is the kind of weakest link? And is that weakest link systemically important? And that's really going to determine how much the Fed can tighten. And you've seen a lot of businesses that have had to take on more debt as a result of just the economic disruptions associated with this pandemic. And so when the Fed starts raising rates, we think that it's really going to turn out that the economy is more interest rate sensitive maybe than people thought. The other thing to keep in mind here is that the Fed's balance sheet is much larger than it was pre-pandemic. And if they want to start to normalize their balance sheet, that just means they're going to hike the Fed funds rate a little bit less than they otherwise would have. So all of that suggests to us that, the target rate in this cycle is probably going to be lower even than it was last cycle.
Tiffany, thank you. And congratulations from us and the team for 50 years of PIMCO. A lot of work's gone into that. Thank you.
Nobody ever says make it complicated. That is why Nationwide makes simplicity a priority by providing financial professionals with straightforward, client-ready resources. From clear strategies to help clients meet retirement savings and income needs, to ways to cover rising healthcare costs and more, Nationwide simplifies planning so more time can be spent helping clients. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Steve Chevron's with us now, portfolio manager at Federated Hermes. I won't speak for Steve. Steve can speak for himself.
I
bet.
I do too,
Steve. Let's build on this. Margins are the epicenter of the earnings story. The difference between the companies that can execute and the companies that are struggling too, Steve. What's your take on that right now?
No, I think this is the story. It's hard to imagine the multiple going a lot higher next year. You've got growth slowing some. Inflation, I think, is very much not transitory, and I think it's going to be persistent. So your upside in the market is your earnings growth. And right now, so far through the earnings season, it's been pretty good. And I think what we're looking for is, how do the margins hold up? Are companies able to pass on price? And at a stock level, you really need to focus on companies that have pricing power. If they have pricing power, they can pass along those costs, then you know what? Inflation's fine for them. If you can't and it starts eating away at your margin, I think you need to expect to get punished. And I think that's what we're looking at, and we're sifting out the winners and the losers right now.
Steve Auth has a 20% return for the last 3 years in one of his portfolios, solidly upper quartile. And this speaks to Federated and Auth and the rest of you guys saying, you've got to be in the market. Speak now to our audiences who are saying, I'm scared stiff, I can't participate.
Yeah. Well, first, it's been an honor to grow under Steve. I think he's terrific. But to that point, you've got to look in the market and say, where's the opportunity? So if we are in an inflationary environment, if that is going to be a bigger impact in the market, which we think it will, the question isn't, do I cut bait and run? The question is, which parts of the market, which trades do I put in place, that allow my portfolio to benefit from that trend, or at least get hurt the least? And so, building up from fixed income, that shorter duration fixed income, something in the 0 to 3 range, not as longer term. It means a little bit more high yield and EM debt, where you've got shorter duration and more spread tightening capabilities. It means equity income, dividend stocks to supplement your fixed income because you're getting a higher yield and it's a little bit more inflation durable. And it means value cyclicals right now, where these companies can pass those prices along. And then I think the last one is, there's select opportunities in international, in our view, particularly in the international small and mid-sized space. So you can't just look to run away, because if you're not in the market, you won't achieve your goals. You won't get that compounding. But you got to look for the areas that are most advantaged, and that's what we're doing across our portfolios.
Steve, at what point do higher inflationary reads that we get on a repeated basis, this idea that perhaps it's not transitory, start to lead to higher yields that really put a crimp in equity returns?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I mean, I think it depends on what kind of equities you're talking about. I think you're going to see some of the growth names underperform sooner. Because remember, when you buy a growth company, you're buying it for their earnings out 5 or 10 years from now, and that can get inflated away. If I'm buying a value cyclical, I'm buying that because I think an oil price is going to be more tomorrow. Well, that's not going to get inflated away. And I think that's the nuance there, Lisa.
Yeah.
But we do have to watch. Yields that get too high do hurt multiples, and that could happen next year.
What you just heard there, folks, from Chivarone is textbook, where growth is a longer-term x-axis and value is a shorter-term view. John, did I hear earlier on bonds that Chivarone recommended the triple leveraged all cash fund?
I'm not sure that's where it was going.
Was that what
Steve,
he was
do you want to finish there? Was that what you were saying?
That's fake news. I'm calling you out there, Tom. Fake news.
Steve, thank you, buddy. Always good to catch up. Thank you very much. Steve Chivarone there of Federated Hermes.
This is the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. Thanks for listening. Join us live weekdays from 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio and on Bloomberg Television each day from 6 to 9 a.m. for insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. And subscribe to the Surveillance Podcast on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Bloomberg.com, and of course, on the terminal. I'm Tom Keene, and this is Bloomberg.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.